Hey guys, welcome back to another big week here on Reality TV. In today's episode, I'll be breaking down the latest Love After Lockup, 90 Day Fiancé Happily Ever After, and 90 Day Fiancé The Other Way. If you're looking for the latest on Married at First Sight, you're going to head over to Patreon this week because I have the full recap of, what is it, episode 2 over there. I'll make sure that I rotate it into this main show next week. You're just going to have to go with the flow with me over the course of the entire season for these 4 shows because it's quite a bit to bite off and recap, but I'm fucking loving it because it is incredible. Also coming up on Patreon next week, Amanda and I are due for a crossover for the all-time best season of Marriage Family Bootcamp. But if you're looking forward to what's coming up on Total Request Podcast, which I, you know, listen, I'm a humble person, but I'm going to brag about TRP because we are having so many laughs over there. You know what? Maybe we should just put an episode or two for you to try, give it a little taste, see if you like it before you throw your money towards it. Because listen, we're all counting our pennies and our dollars these days. Amanda and I totally get it. So we're trying to give you a big old bang for your buck. Last week, we did an episode of Obsessive Compulsive Cleaners, and it is this crazy British show where 2 OCD cleaners, I'm not even as bad as these people, and I'm pretty freaking crazy with my cleanliness stuff. They go to help out this woman who owns a legit castle in Wales. It's bananas. So that was on the $4 show. For $6 a month, you get an extra 4 shows a month where Amanda and I assign each other episodes. And I am a real bitchy friend, and I made her watch Extreme Forensics, the episode that she played the murder victim in. Oh, we had a lot of laughs at her expense, but she's a good sport. Now, coming up this week on TRP on the $4 show, we are going to be breaking down an episode of 4 Weddings. Only because the show that we were actually planning on recapping, which is the iconic True Life episode, everyone knows it. It was MTV True Life, I'm Getting Married, you know, with a guy who's like, I'm gonna gut you like the motherfucking fish that you are, that guy. Well, number one, turns out he just died yesterday. So what weird timing is that? Amanda and I feel like maybe we put this out in the universe somehow. I don't know. But we just cannot find the episode anywhere online. I mean, I searched the depths of Google and Daily Motion, YouTube. You can't find the episode anywhere. So we'll be covering an episode of 4 Weddings. And at the $6 Dabella Dabal patron level, we are going to be talking about the first 2 seasons of Breaking Bad. I've never seen the series before, and I will be watching all 5 or 6 seasons. So we'll be checking in on seasons 1 and 2 this week. Thank you to Ruth Ann, Allison, Donna, Amanda, and Lori, who are my newest Patreon subscribers. Truly, I thank each and every one of you, whether you are donating $1 a month to get all these episodes ad-free, or 5 or 10 or 15, 20, where you're getting t-shirts and mugs. Truly, I appreciate it. And you're keeping this show here going. So thank you so much. Okay, I'm just going to jump right into our shows because, like I said, we got 3 big ones this week. Let's start out with Love After Lockup. And I'm going to start with Chevelle and Quaylon because they're just really boring. I cannot even think of anything to snark on with these 2. It's pretty common sense logistical things that are going to come up in any kind of relationship. Chevelle's family is super skeptical of Quaylon because, you know, Quaylon's in prison. And Quaylon's mom is skeptical of Chevelle because she's a new woman in his life and she wants her baby boy. She wants her son to come home and live with her. So where does Quaylon fit into this not that great of a drama? I can't believe I'm actually wishing drama on a couple, but I am. Well, he's masterminding this whole thing. He's lying to both of them. It kind of has the feel of a Sarah, Megan, and Michael, except it's between mom and girlfriend, not wife and girlfriend. I'm already kind of bored with it. All right, so let's get into the greatest couple out of all of these, and it is John and Christiana. To me, John is just a gift that keeps on giving. And I only think it's going to get better because he looks a little affected in his one-on-ones. So to me, that means he may be using something out of sorrow and regret when he's talking about his past with Christiana, if you get what I'm saying. But in this week's episode, we meet up with John, who's ready to go get Christiana. And he's such a dad. You know, he's got the dad jokes. He's got the dad shoes and socks. Take a look at him. It just is screaming, I'm a dad on a road trip and I got my agenda. So everyone better get cracking. We got to make John's fifth wedding dreams come true. Yeah, you got that right. Let's remember that John is having his fifth wedding, but only his fourth wife because he married bride number three twice. John's life is like the most difficult Common Core math word problem ever. Now, let's talk a little bit about this wedding because it's crazy to me. It didn't make it to Bridezilla's. The look of this thing is just what every bride dreams of. John is dressed like if Strawberry Shortcake had a little male friend who also lived on the border of My Little Pony Land. Like his name would be Huckleberry John or Jamberry John or some shit. You know, his little pony stamp is a purple ribbon that looks like a Metallica logo or some shit. He's definitely got some like Dwight Schrute, hard metal rock kind of thing going on. He's also got that very earthy, I'm in touch with my Native American roots thing. And he's definitely got that Renaissance fair aura about him. He's a lot of look, but somehow John, after he wrapped himself in his ribbons, he's wrangled two of his friends and a limo driver in on his plans for this ambush proposal and wedding. So all of them are erecting this arch on the back of his truck, which I don't understand at all because it would have been a lot easier if they just placed that arch on the ground next to his truck. There's plenty of trees around. They could have leaned it on something. I don't understand the logistics and how it makes it any easier if they actually have it on the truck. Well, maybe they didn't have to get a permit or something. Maybe he's got plans for it to be used in future child number 9. Scratch that number 10's future bar mitzvah. Who knows? But just as John is hanging up the super sexy purple satin drapes in the back seat, complimenting his pony ribbons, if you noticed, he dashes away in the limo to get Christiana, that lucky bride-to-be, has no idea what she's in for. Now, when we first lay eyes on Christiana, I don't know if it was just me, but I actually thought she was kind of cute. She seemed pretty normal. She seemed sweet, very overwhelmed, but genuinely happy. She didn't seem to be putting it on right away. So I was like, oh, look at her. She's a nice girl in her weird length prison mom jorts. And then I heard a voiceover voice, a voice I immediately assumed was John because it was kind of deep and raspy and very like I have a trach, you know, like. So imagine all of our surprise, I'm assuming, when we see a black eye-lined Christiana come on the screen. I don't know what the hell happened. Well, I can only imagine what happened in the back of that truck that we haven't seen yet. Something happened, though, between that prison and that limo ride, because when Christiana speaks by herself in her one-on-one, she sounds like she just got punched in the throat or something or ate a piece of steel wool. And that doesn't make sense to me because when she was coming out of that prison, she sounded like a normal female voice, like, oh my gosh, look at this. I can't believe you did that. So pair her new voice, I didn't see John coming with the limo, with her new eyeliner look, you know, that liquid liner in the lower lid line, that water line. And then she does this thin liquid line over her eye. It's a very specific liner technique, and it's a red flag. When you see it, you know what I'm talking about. It's like, this chick has seen some things. She would be the kind of girl who would go on Rock of Love, a new Rock of Love reboot, Brett's COVID hotel on wheels. She would do that in a heartbeat. Okay, so let's keep an eye on Christiana. I think she's going to screw him over, but especially that voice. I got to know what's going on there. Because if she faked the high voice, kind of like a gypsy, it could get really, really scary and really amazing to watch. Okay, Lindsay and Scott. So it's Lindsay's release day, and Scott's packed up a few things for her to wear. Interesting choices, namely a track jacket and tie-dye underwear from an ultra-exclusive upscale boutique designer underwear called, you're going to want to write this down, Pink. That's spelled P-I-N-K. Ladies, how do we miss snagging this one percenter? Man, she sure got a catch. Now, Scott has also been doing a little bit more shopping. He's also been buying Lindsay's young daughter clothes when he's been shopping with her. I'll repeat that, shopping with her very young daughter. I mean, bravo, amazing judgment call from Lindsay and her grandma/mom, Brenda. Shocking, Lindsay turned out the way she did. I mean, with all the guidance, protection, keen eyes all around. Must have been that nature, not nurture, that caused Lindsay to be so good at being bad, right? Now, I really don't want to put this all on Brenda because she does seem like a saint, to be honest, the way that she was tearing up and getting emotional. But something has got to be off here, right? I'm sure there's some more trauma in Lindsay's past that we don't know about. But I should also say, although I completely disagree with Scott hanging out with her young daughter because, you know, she has never even met Scott in person, I don't think he is a creep or a pedophile. We found out that he has a son or had a son that passed away, and it's very sad. But still, you don't introduce anyone, any man or woman to your kids before you have even met them. Maybe just call me cautious and I'm the crazy one. Now, we actually get to meet Brenda and Lindsay's daughter named Miley Grace. And I'm just going to say a little silent prayer that she's not named after Miley Cyrus because we're in that generation now. But this little one seems like a super sweet girl, really smart. God, I just hope she doesn't follow in her mom's footsteps because although we haven't met Lindsay, I'm just going to go out on a limb and say she may not be the greatest human on earth. Okay, Maurice and Jessica. Oh, you guys, Jessica is a hot mess, and I hate that expression, but there's no other way to describe this chick. I know what I'm about to say is going to cross the line, and it's going to sound real bitchy, but I'm just going to say what everyone else is saying. This chick is a rough 33. She has the maturity of, I would say, maybe a 21-year-old, a 20-year-old, but she's aged far beyond her years. Now, she's got that shaky voice that I talked about. I don't know if she's in withdrawal of something or something that's making her heartbeat really fast, and that's why her voice sounds really cracky and really like this. Like, she's always about to start on an edge, and she's going to fall off. Every time I watch this chick, I feel like I need to drink hot tea and take a hit off of an inhaler or something. Now, we also find out she actually hasn't seen Maurice in person in 2 years because, crazy story, somehow the prison thought Maurice was getting drugs into prison. Wonder what that was all about. I mean, it couldn't have been because the person who he was having conjugal visits with could have been slipping something in. Weird. Now, like I said, this happened 2 years ago, but Jessica stuck around because they're married and they're made for each other. It's just too bad that that dress wasn't made for her in the same way because girl needed to size up. There is nothing wrong with sizing up, ladies. Well, really, in particular, I'm talking to Jessica. I mean, no one sees that label except you and the Target self-checkout scanner. Size up. No one looks at your label. Now, Jessica is waiting outside this prison for hours. I would have been in my car with the AC blasting, scrolling Facebook, but Jessica's out there tweaking out on something. But finally, Maurice gets out of this prison van, and I was actually shocked. I had seen his photo, but I didn't think he was going to be as cute as he was. I mean, he's got this baby face. I think he's super attractive. he and Jessica have the exact same front top four teeth. Take a look at it. It's like this flat teeth shape. It's almost crazy that they found each other. But again, I just have to say this. I'm a real bitch about Jessica, I suppose. He seems too cute for her. You see it too? All right, let's move on before I just get meaner and meaner. Let's talk about Sean and Destiny. I am quickly losing my sympathy for Sean, real quickly, because Destiny calls Sean and she was speaking a mile a minute, which means either she only had 1 minute on her little phone card thing, or she was on speed, or a third cup of coffee like last week, right? Now, all she cared about when she was talking to him was reassuring that I'm going to lose weight. I put 20 pounds on, but I'm going to look so much better once I lose weight. Don't really look at me because I'm not going to have makeup on. I promise I'll be hot for you again. Now, obviously, we know Destiny has to be a real piece of work because she quickly shoo-shoos that whole part about $50,000 out of Sean's pocket if she disappears. But I want to talk about Sean because he showed his true colors when she was talking about how she's not going to look great when she gets out. He doesn't say anything like, it doesn't matter how you look. I'm just excited to see you, baby. I love you. No, he just says, no, I know you will. Fuck you, Dentures McGee. Who are you to be saying, oh, I know that you'll get hot? No, you are lucky this chick is asking you for $50,000 because we learn even more about him. Like I said, I have maybe like 10% sympathy for him, and that's only because I don't think he's playing with a full deck. Now, later he meets up with his ex and his daughter at Plato's Closet. Everyone knows a good resale shop. And obviously, they were there because producers want to let us know not so subtly that neither Sean or his ex are swimming in money, right? So it turns out Sean never married his ex. I just assumed ex-wife because they had 6 kids together, but he never wanted to marry her. And we find out that this guy has spent thousands on Destiny instead of his kids. I think we all assumed that, but his ex confirms that. You know, how about spending money on all of your kids' wardrobes? Maybe your daughter right here so she doesn't have to be at Plato's Closet. Give her some cash so she could go to, I don't know, TJ Maxx even, instead of sending Destiny money for her commissary. What a freaking jerk. And you know Sean has bags full of new designer clothes, like Scott, some designer pink underwear for this chick. But his kids can just deal with it that he's meeting this new woman. They can just deal with some used American Eagle jeans. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but let's just look at the big full picture here. Now then Sean starts yelling at his ex. She can't judge Destiny because you don't even know her. Neither do you, dipshit. You have literally never laid eyes on this woman before. And then this guy's sweet daughter is having to stand there in the middle of fucking Plato's Closet with no less than 2 cameras on her and listen to her dad choosing a stranger over her. And that may not be exactly what he's doing, but that's how she feels. She at least is correct in the fact that Sean is rushing this. Destiny's getting out tomorrow. And this is the first time his kids are even learning about her. Bad. Shame on him for doing that, because if you're going to introduce this woman not only to your kids but into your home, she's going to be living there, which means she's going to be there when they visit. He owed that to them to give them a heads up about this more than 24 hours ahead of time. Now, we still have not met at least 2 couples, which begs the question, which couples are we going to quickly say goodbye to? My money's on Quaylon and Chevelle because they're not really bringing anything to us this season. Or Sean and Destiny quickly break up and they are off the show. One of the couples looks like the woman with short red hair and she's like chewing on her boyfriend's shoulder. And then there are another 2 names if you look at the whole roster of Love After Lockup. So WeTV is really giving us a gift this season. Let's get ready for a back-to-back 90-day fiancé spectacular, our Sunday-Monday night duo. I just want to talk about Larissa for a moment because I refuse to actually recap anything that she talks about or does on the show. I cannot take another person that's going to dictate their storyline. I mean, sure, they all do to a certain extent. But Larissa in this Eric guy, it's so fake and phony and contrived. And she did get burned that last scene that they were showing. But that's what you ask for when you get involved with another fellow psycho that's going to make up storylines. So I'm not even going to talk about her. TLC just needs to say bye-bye, as they also need to say goodbye to frickin' River and Family Chantel, because River and the stupid cowboy hat-wearing mom showed up on Pillow Talk, a show that I have grown to love. And I could not watch the episode. I will not watch any more Pillow Talk if those assholes show their face anywhere on TLC again. I think we all need to contact TLC, tag them on Twitter, whatever we need to do, but they need to go, and so does Larissa. All right, back to regularly scheduled programming. Let's start with Colt, Debbie, and Jess. Debbie. She has taken a tumble. She really is the worst. Remember when we used to feel badly for her? No. She has quickly fallen down the ranks to damn near the bottom. This week, Colt and Debbie meet Jess's family. And I don't know if it was like her dad's house or her aunt's house. This place looked so dreamy to me. It would be a perfect home or vacation, or I'd actually would be open to seeing any franchise of The Real Housewives take a vacation to this place, because there was this indoor-outdoor kitchen that almost looked like a movie set. Ugh, Silvio, Papa, take me away. Now, Colt throws on this heavy, velvety, corduroy sports jacket that you know he got on the clearance rack at Kohl's, and Debbie throws on, well, the same plaid shirt she has been wearing for 2 days in the hot, sweltering Brazilian heat. She's freaking gross. Jess's family could not have been more welcoming. Just very warm family. Her dad's cooking up this gorgeous meal. And freaking Deb has to go and say Silvio is weird. I mean, that dad's kind of weird. And she rolls her eyes. Excuse me? Weird? You want to talk about being weird? Let's talk about you feeding your adult son like he's a freaking toddler and then bringing up his ex at every opportunity you can. She is a horrible person. Even at the dinner table where Jess's dad puts down this delicious looking pot of black beans. It's my favorite kind, where there's a little bit of fresh pico de gallo in there. I saw those fresh tomatoes and I nearly climaxed. But Debbie looks at it and thinks, wow, this is a really good chance for me to say, I remember those, because Larissa once made black beans. Well, you know who else made black beans? Fucking Taco Bell. And 90% of people in the United States have eaten or seen or partaken in black beans. But she's got to bring up Larissa, even at the girlfriend's family's house. It's not even if it's just Larissa. I'm so furious about this. I would have shoved Debbie's face right in those freaking beans if I didn't want to eat them first. The thing is, if she really had a concern for Colt, she was really worried about her son, and if she had a shred of decency in her body, she could have brought up her concerns at the dinner table in a way more tactful way. You don't have to throw your hands up and say, so, I guess I'm the only one that thinks it's too soon. Read the room, Debbie. Colt is not going to be able to come to your rescue when he can't speak the language and translate for you. I mean, he didn't actually hush her either, which would have been a good call if he couldn't do the translating. He told Jess to pipe down, but he didn't tell his mom because, you know, Colt's a freaking puss. Now, he did send her home in a taxi, which brought actual tears to Debbie's eyes because she couldn't believe her man, her Colt, would choose a woman over her, which is so disgusting. I mean, I'm dying to know what Debbie's relationship with her in-laws was like. Did her husband act like Colt, where he was choosing her mother-in-law over her? You know what I'm saying? I would love to go back in time and know. Now, she was married to Colt's dad after 6 months. That brings a whole other, I guess, round of ammunition for Jess or any woman that's going to be with Colt, because Debbie's got no right to say jack shit about how fast Colt is moving in any relationship if she herself did the same thing. You know, she hates who Colt is going to end up marrying. There's a very simple solution to it. Don't live with them anymore. I am certain there is some small one-bedroom condo in Vegas that Debbie could put a deposit down, especially with the money that they're getting from this show. And if they sold the townhouse, you know, tell Colt, our days of living together are over. You pay your own bills, I pay mine. It's obviously not working out. The past 5 years have been complete hell for both of us. You know, take some advice of your little slot machine of the Vegas culture. It's just not worth the risk anymore. Cash out, you guys. Now, of course, I gotta talk about this walk on the beach. I definitely didn't enjoy any of it, but there was something about Colt's left nipple staring at me directly in the eye that it just cut me to the core. What in the world possessed Colt to wear those things, to purchase those? I'm pretty sure men in Brazil wear longer swim trunks. Any listeners in Brazil, you want to confirm or deny to me that trunks longer than his taint level are worn in Brazil? He would have looked fine in longer ones. Even ugly carpenter-style swim trunks. You know what I'm talking about. We know he shops at Kohl's. I know for a fact they have them there. I had to go over there to do my returns for Amazon, which I freaking hate, by the way. Why don't I get a choice for how I get to ship it back? But that's a whole other story. But listen, I know that Kohl's has some longer swim trunks for men in the big and tall section. And I'm not body-shaming him. I'm just saying, get anything that fits. Even if he was going to insist on that, whatever style it was, get the size that fits you. No one sees the freaking size. Colt even says himself, I'm not a baby boy. Don't call me baby boy. Well, then don't wear baby boy size shorts. All right? There. Now, then we get to Colt's, well, I'm not going to say gaslighting. It was manipulation and it was just freaking cruel, because Colt turns this entire issue of Debbie onto Jess. He knows that Jess's mom passed away and was sick, so he uses that to his advantage, saying, well, you would live with your dad if he was sick, so why can't I live with my mom? Well, first of all, Debbie isn't sick. If she can hop on a flight to and from Brazil, she's fine. She can handle living on her own. Go and see her every day. Have her make her disgusting microwave steak for you, but you don't need to live with her. Or you shut up about it and you decide whether you are going to be with Jess or not, because she should not have to change what she's doing and who she is to make your mommy happy, because you're not a baby boy. Okay, Elizabeth and Andre. Well, guess what, guys? Elizabeth's dad and brother are arriving in Moldova. And lucky for us, the Karma train is pulling into the Chesnau station just in time to meet the American assholes' flight, because they lost their luggage. Oh, no. You mean family Elizabeth is going to have to wear their same skid-marked underwear for another day? Poor Chuck. Oh, I'm going to put this disclaimer out there because some of you may be new listeners. I just want it to be known, I despise Andre. I think he is a chauvinistic, lazy piece of shit. But my God, he is not responsible for the Moldovan airline luggage claim section. And he did not design the layout of the airport. You smug American fucks. You had a rough flight, boo-hoo. Get over it. And you know what? Blame your daughter. She was the one who wanted to have this dream Moldovan wedding. Remember that? Becky, with the good hair and the bad mugshot, she was in tears. This is my sister's dream wedding. She always wanted to have it, and I have to miss it because I had a baby. So take it out on Elizabeth, not the guy who was born there due to no fault of his own. And why wasn't Elizabeth speaking up in the car? This makes me furious. Her dad and brother are in the front seat, back seat, slinging insults from every direction, literally every direction. Every single thing they see or they hear or, who knows, maybe even smell, they get pissed about it. Elizabeth's just sitting there silent, not a word to say, just staring out the window. If my family were saying really rude stuff like that and ignorant things too, to my husband, and I just sat there, I really cannot even imagine. Elizabeth is just as bad as her family. She's always sticking up for them to Andre. She's always saying, I want to make sure they're comfortable. They didn't mean that, but she never does the same thing for Andre. And again, to be clear, I think Andre sucks. He's really a terrible guy. But Elizabeth's family also sucks. So all sides are wrong here. And that actually makes Elizabeth ultra wrong, because she kind of picks and chooses which side she wants to be on. She makes these battles, and then she chooses which side she's going to go on, and then she contradicts herself all at the same time. So let's now fast forward to, oh my God, this amazing spread that Andre's mom must have spent probably days cooking. It looked incredible, a little scary, but I would probably partake in 85% of it there. Chuck thinks he is such a good guy. I mean, he is congratulating himself because he said thank you before launching into his very non-subtle line of questioning about their son, Andre. You know, we get it, Chuck. You think that there's some super scary secret that you're going to nail Andre on, but guess what? Even if there is, your daughter picked him, so it doesn't matter anymore. They're married already. They have a daughter. If you don't like him, you have a choice here. Truly wash your hands of Andre and your daughter, because she's doing the same thing. But you know what? Chuck never will, because he loves having strings attached. I bet you were going to say he loves his daughter. I'm sure he does. But he also loves having that tie to Elizabeth and Andre, because it gives him the right to be as judgmental as he wants, as dickish as he wants, which makes you say, I wonder where Libby learned her type. Isn't it always said that girls choose someone just like their dad to marry? So how about them apples, Chuck? All right, let's move on to, let's talk about Kalani and Asuelu, because the most exciting thing to me was seeing that they are at the same park where he hurt his boo hole. Remember that? Maybe it was some bad memory, some PTSD that kind of gave him a kick in the ass to apologize, because he kind of beat around the bush for a while, but he did apologize to Kalani. He also asked Kalani to be his bus driver. Asuelu. I mean, he's just a simple man. And I don't mean that as an insult at all, because it's charming at first. Obviously, I'm guilty of falling for him because I was Asuelu's biggest fan. But I think it ends there. You know, he's just a simple guy. I think Kalani assumed Asuelu had the same kind of quiet demeanor as her dad. You know, once he opens up and once he gets some more experience and he ages, he's going to have that deep, quiet wisdom in him, just like my dad. Maybe I'm projecting a little bit, because I still think Lo is a very sexy older gentleman, despite that pubic beard that I'm always afraid is going to get zipped up in his hoodie zipper. But we can all see by now, Asuelu is not a Lo. Now, the issue that comes up in this episode, every in-law situation is different, but there's always going to be something, unless you are very, very lucky. If it were me, I would be infuriated if my husband outright said in front of his family that, like, I'm the bad guy. I'm the one who doesn't want to send money, or I'm the one who doesn't want to go to this holiday or that event. But it's time for Kalani to just say it and be open and honest, just like his family is very vocal about, I want money, send me more. It's a cultural thing, I get it, but that also gives her permission to say what she needs to say. It's not going to be comfortable, because she was raised in our American culture where you don't really act like that, but she has to do it. She has to set her boundaries now. And I'm saying this as someone who has in-laws. I'll leave it there. But I think I speak for all of us who have had issues, no matter what they were, with in-laws. You gotta set the boundaries early, because it will only get more mucky if you don't. And you know what? If her in-laws end up not liking her, she's got to learn to say, oh, well, you know, they don't sleep in your bed at night with you. And I promise Kalani will get to a place where she will not give a shit anymore. She's not going to care if they are talking behind her back. She's not going to care if they're unhappy with her. Her priority is and will always be her children. And she sounds like she's open to sending some money, but she needs to know that it's okay. You're allowed to take care of your home and your family too. Draw the line, because Asuelu really probably just doesn't know how. Okay, Paul and Karini, you guys, Paul finally did it. He signed a lease on a murder shed. I think we all knew it was just a matter of time. And here we are, front row seat to a future Dateline hosted by Josh Mankiewicz adventure. This studio home, also known as a 15 by 15 shed with an ensuite, is Paul's solution to his homelessness. And I am not going to put it past him to think it's his permanent solution. I think he's perfectly happy to live there forever, because he's perfectly happy to settle for anything or nothing. The location of this place, I truly am concerned for Karini and the baby, because the place looks like it's in a warehouse graveyard or behind some warehouse. It is just feet from railroad tracks. Perfectly good, you know, if you didn't have a baby that will be walking in a few months. And where did all the money that they were paid from this show go? Not that it would make them millionaires by any means, but it should certainly have been enough for them to make a little down payment on a small little house in, where are they, Kentucky? It definitely was feasible. So where did the money go? I'm actually also concerned about these two dogs that Paul apparently had. He had been paying for his dogs to be at a, he calls it a training facility, which I would hope is nicer than where Paul is having them live. And now he has these two German shepherds. I think that's what they are. They scare me to death, but they seemed like very nice animals. Why is he throwing them in a chicken coop with hay? I didn't think that hay was for dogs, right? That can't be comfortable. That's got to be all scratchy. And you know, Paul is not responsible enough to let those dogs out of there and run and play or to go inside the place, because inside that studio home, there's no room for two dogs, two grown humans, and a little baby that's going to be crawling around. And he can't let the dogs run around outside because there's train tracks. I don't think he should just like give away the dogs, but I do think the dogs deserve a better life. And Paul could be spending the dog food money and the vet bills on his wife and kids, on their health insurance and on their food, which you know that they are not having on the regular. Paul's just a disaster. Anyone know the status of those dogs? And Karini and the baby, of course. All right, let's move along to Angela and Michael. Angela sucks, you guys. She's horrible. I don't know what to say, except once again, she made a fool out of herself in that market, and it makes all Americans look bad. She's a grown woman, a grandmother. Pull yourself together and get over yourself, Angela. You know, from the looks of it, Angela has seen and eaten a lot worse. And I hate seeing stuff like slaughtered animals and all that kind of stuff too. But I also have something called manners and common sense and empathy and, oh, eyelids. Close your frickin' eyes if you don't want to see it. So can we all just resume calling Angela on her horrible behavior and remember who Angela is at her core? Everyone seems to have forgotten that Angela is not this charming, funny, outgoing, lively woman. She showed her true colors on those tell-alls before. She's never going to be kooky old Angela to me. Stupid Angela, you know, thinking malaria is caused by making eye contact with a dead goat. That's stupid. That's ignorant. Much like Angela, I'm going to be stubborn and I'm not going to budge on that. If you need further convincing, of course you don't, but I'm going to proceed anyway. Angela's refusing to cook anything at all for Michael's mother. She won't even try. She's so freaking self-righteous and rude. So this is what it comes down to. Angela wants to say it's about not wanting to change who she is because, you know, she's a strong, independent woman. She's American. But she wants Michael to change to be American even now when he's in Nigeria. So she wants to be American in America, in Nigeria, and she wants Michael to change everything basically because she won't. She's got Michael's mom eating pizza because she just can't be bothered because she just doesn't wanna. Even if she would have made one or two easy things and then ordered the main dish from a restaurant, you know, say, I'm still learning, I wanted to give it a try, show an effort, just show that you care. That's all it takes is just a little bit of effort. But in Angela's mind, she's only going to put effort into the things that she wants, and that's it. You know, the perfect recipe for a happy marriage, a partner who only wants what she wants and nothing more. All right, you guys, let's take a very quick break, and then let's get into 90 Day Fiancé the other way. Well, turns out we cannot have the best of both worlds. We can't have train wreck couples and a perfect couple in love here on TLC. And yeah, I'm talking about Kenneth and Armando. I feel like I heard the world's hearts break watching this latest episode. Why can't Kenneth just give Armando a moment? I don't think Kenneth is a terrible person, but he's got to step out of his own self for a moment. Armando has only had, what, 2 or 3 days where he hasn't been under his family's thumb. You know, he's finally being able to start to live this new life of his, and it's gonna take a minute. Love is patient. Love is kind. And Kenneth, love knows when to shut the fuck up and stop being stubborn and pushy and give your partner some space. Now, this Disney fairy tale love story is starting to show its cracks, and we've all been there. You know, we all have that honeymoon phase of falling in love, and you're thinking, oh my God, no one has ever been as in love as we are. And then you realize, oh shit, I swear to God, if he puts the fork in the dishwasher that way one more time, I'm going to stab him with it. Okay, we all go through that transitional time where we are figuring out, oh, this is who I'm actually dealing with. Now, I don't think Armando and Kenneth are there just yet. They're still happy and, you know, skipping down the sidewalk and that kind of shit and smiling at each other and think it's cute to give each other pecks under a Jesus statue. Oh, and it is cute watching them. I'm talking about our feelings towards Kenneth. You know, I feel like he's starting to become a real person for us. He's not just this ageless beauty that he looks on the outside. He's a real person. And it makes sense because Kenneth is quite a bit older than Armando, so he may just naturally fall into that more, I don't want to say dad role, maybe just the more dominant role, you know, the decision maker. So I'm hoping, I'm crossing my fingers that when Kenneth sees this season on TV, he sees himself, he'll get a little reality check and realize that he can be a little stubborn. You know, he's not horrible. He's not super controlling, like sleeping with the enemy or anything. I just think he needs to be cautious and we need to be cautious and guard our hearts so we are not heartbroken by, well, I don't want to say Armando because I don't think Armando could hurt a fly. He and Hannah are in my prayers every night with my kids and my husband. Kenneth, I'm being cautious, but I still love you. All right, Devin and Jihoon. I was shocked, floored that number one, Drusilla's hair was in a ponytail, which made her look actually very cute and way more comfortable in that heat than her hair dangling down and all in her face. And number two, I was shocked to see Devin's mom not being a super obnoxious, annoying American going, ew, in the Korean market. I was very impressed. Her mom was curious. She was open to trying the new food. I mean, of course, I think any of us might cringe and be like, oh, if someone put down maggots on the table, whatever the hell that was. But I thought she was doing a very good job of being respectful. I think she's got a large personality. I don't know what that's like, but I thought she did great. Now, fast forward to a much more difficult scene. Ji-hoon and his parents at the restaurant waiting for Devin. I need to go back and double check this, but if it was Ji-hoon's mom that asked Ji-hoon to only get 3 waters, knowing Devin was on her way with her grandson, then that's pretty shitty because you think she'd say 4 waters for all of us. Now, if it was Ji-hoon's father, I apologize because, yeah, I'm bitch eating crackers with Ji-hoon's mom because I think his mom is a bitch. I think Ji-hoon gets it from his mama. He's a dick, you guys. When he saw Devin in the restaurant struggling with the huge-ass stroller in the car seat and she's getting her shoes off and getting settled, he walks right past her and ignores her. The hell? He didn't even flinch. Not even to say hello to his infant son. I could not even believe it. Now, then they all sit down, and it was just immediately game on. As I had speculated or theorized last week, Father Ji-hoon is the sweetest man possibly on earth. He's definitely the steady mind or the steady hand in the family. And you can see he has such a big heart and he wants to make it right. Even if he's throwing himself under the bus for Ji-hoon, he just wants to make things good for Ji-hoon and good for Devin and his grandson. I'm sure he is terrified of Devin leaving with her son and them never seeing him again. And oh my God, that freaking bitch of a mom. When she said, shut up, don't tell me to stand up, what do I need to stand up for? Oh, I don't know, because your daughter-in-law and your grandson are here. Stand the fuck up, you bitch. You could see this knowing glance between Devin and Ji-hoon's dad, and that made me feel better for Devin because I did think on some level she knew someone was there on her side, even if Ji-hoon was screaming at her and his mom was sitting there laughing at one point and like nodding in agreement with Ji-hoon, looking at Devin like, what the fuck is she talking about? At least Ji-hoon's dad was nodding with everything Devin said, you know? It makes it really hard to imagine how we were all tricked last year, how we were scammed. We were scammed just like Devin, although I think scam is kind of a strong word that Devin used later. But we were all tricked into thinking that Ji-hoon was this amazing guy. We were all Ji-swooned, remember? Oh, how cute, his mom came here and ate raw bacon. Well, now I'm glad that that bleep ate that shit. It matches her shit-eating grin when Devin said her life is ruined. His mom smiled and laughed at Devin. She's a horrible person. I think she's probably that typical narcissistic mom who played Ji-hoon and played her husband, Ji-hoon's dad, into whatever thing she was cooking up next. And somewhere in the midst of that, Ji-hoon just became entitled and privileged and a spoiled brat. So here we have Devin sitting there. She's with the baby. Ji-hoon runs out like a baby, like a spoiled brat, like Paul. Yeah, I'm going there. Ji-hoon and Paul definitely have that same, I'm going to run out of here and throw a temper tantrum because I really want everyone to run after me because that's their attention getting moved. That's their way to get attention. And here we're left with Devin sitting there with a little baby, looks like kind of late at night, and her nasty mother-in-law. In that moment, I just wanted to hug Devin. I wanted to hug Father Ji-hoon because he definitely needed one after living with that psycho for however many years. But I also wanted to take that translator app and bring it home because that piece of shit translator, it was the wrong time for it to be saying such funny shit, but that would be such a great game. Like, there's got to be some sort of board game someone comes up with where you say something into it and you have to guess, like, is that the correct translation or is it not? Especially the one that the translator was like, it is a sunny bridegroom. Whoa, where did that one come from? So although I felt terrible for Devin in the moment, I'm hoping someday, maybe when she makes up with Ji-hoon's parents or Ji-hoon's mom and Ji-hoon, of course, she can look back at that and laugh, because I want that replayed at a tell-all. I will beg, I will tweet TLC. We need to see more of that freaking translator. Okay, Yazin and Brittany. Oh, speaking of translating, holy shit. Now, Yazin and Brittany are still on the outs with this family. Of course they are, because, you know, there's no way in hell these two can actually be together. But they have recruited Yazin's uncle to be the middleman here. Uncle looks like he should be living in some nasty apartment in New York City, and he's like an up-and-coming stand-up comic. It's something with the hat. I don't know what it is, but I just started going on like this fan fiction thing where he has like late night spots at the Comedy Store, but he's a real dick in real life. It's a whole thing. And then I started picturing like he also is an Uber driver and he's really nasty and he gets bad reviews. I need to come up with some sort of anonymous blog. Anyhow, they're having tea together and Yazin starts explaining very logically that he needs his uncle to tell his family that they just need more time because Brittany needs to learn the culture, understand what she's getting into because they haven't really spent time together. And he's also telling Brittany, you got to understand that if we are given this time, you need to take it seriously and understand the gravity of moving to this country and changing religions, committing to my religion. The whole thing is bullshit, though, because let's remember, Brittany is married, you guys. It doesn't even matter if they're given more time because it's not going to be enough time for her to finalize this divorce. It doesn't just happen in a week or 2 weeks' time. I mean, it could be a year before she finalizes this. So although Brittany is sitting there optimistic, like, oh, okay, they're going to give us time. Well, it'll be great because then if they give us permission, we'll just get married a little bit later. It doesn't freaking matter, girl. You're never going to get married to this guy because you just don't get it. You have to be divorced. And when they find out that you are not, you just better get on the next flight out of there because, oh, here go hell come. All right. Ariella and Binyam. Sit down for this one because I don't think this has ever really truly happened before where I have zero to snark on. I only have nice things to say. I'm actually scaring myself here. I feel like maybe I'm a little rusty. Maybe I've worked out too hard. I'm low on electrolytes or something because I have nothing but praise and wonderful things to say about Ariella's mom. I adore her. She really does have an open mind. She's not judgmental or biased, which I think would be very difficult to do if you were in Ethiopia in that kind of third world health facility. You're coming in as a very experienced, well-trained nurse for what, 30 years, and you're coming into this hospital. But she was so professional and complimentary and warm. I have said this before, Ariella's mom would be anyone's dream nurse. Next to, of course, Kim from People Are Wild podcast. Yep, everyone loves Kim. She's the sweetest, smartest, most generous, badass ER nurse ever. If you don't subscribe to People Are Wild podcast, go and binge. She's amazing. But Ariella's mom, just the best. If I had anything to say bad about this threesome, it would just be Ariella going silent like Elizabeth did. She didn't really say anything to defend Binyam, but I also think she knows her mom well enough that her mom told her, I have specific questions and I have certain things that I want answered and I don't want you to answer for him. I don't want you to tell me what I want to hear. I want to hear it from him. I may be giving Ariella more credit than she's due, but I just kind of get that feeling that her mom and her are very close, and that was just their understanding. I don't think Ariella is going to be calling her family for support. And again, I may be very biased because I like her mom this much that I actually think her mom would draw the line and be like, nope, this is what you chose. You need to figure it out. If you want to come home, we can help you out, but we're not just going to be sending you money over there when we don't know what the hell is going on. Okay, now that leads us to our last couple of the episode. Tim and Melissa, also known as Pelito de Queso está en Colombia con Melissa. That would be Cheese Stick is in Colombia with Melissa. Or Melissa, Jesus, Melissa. So, yes, Tim has finally done it. He has made his way to Colombia, and Melissa is at the most pet-friendly airport in the world, apparently, because she's brought her two dogs, just brings them in on leashes like nothing. Is this a normal thing that people do? Because I've never seen it before in my life. Thank God, because I am so highly allergic to cats. If people were able to bring their house pets into the airport, I would look like the kid from the movie MASH. Anyhow, immediately, Melissa notices that Tim has put on some weight. Quite a bit of it, she says. And I have mixed feelings about her bringing this up and saying it on camera because, let's be honest, if it were the other way around, we would be screaming if some guy was saying that about his female fiance, that he's calling her out on her weight. But then again, Tim cheated on Melissa, so I feel like she's allowed to be a little bitter or judgy. Then later they go for a beer at this gorgeous bar that overlooks the city and the mountains. So obviously I was distracted by that and I was planning the fantasy of, wow, if I ever get to leave my city again, wouldn't that be great? Oh, I wonder what it would be like to fly on an airplane again next year or in 5 years. But I did get to sink into Melissa's mind frame. And I think she's asking legitimate questions. I don't think she's being angry at him. She's being firm, but she's not going batshit crazy on Tim. She's asking him questions because she has lingering concerns. She doesn't feel like she's gotten a full explanation from Tim. He responds with, I don't know why we're still talking about this. We talked about it ad nauseum. Oh, Cheese Stick, no, that is not what you say. Because I think everyone knows when you're cheated on, you may never get over that. So the person who cheated has to be willing to answer questions if that person wants to ask questions, and that may be for the rest of your lives. So can you deal with that hanging over your head? Can you deal with Melissa getting pissy every now and then because it won't go away? And if the answer is no, that you can't deal with her questions and her lingering concerns, then it sucks that you cheated, man, because you had a really good thing and you messed it up. He created the problem, so he has to deal with it now. It's not just a thing of her getting over it and never speaking about it again. She's got to go through a process. He's got to go through a process. And Tim seems like he wants her to speed up the pace, so it makes it easier on him. I don't know about these two. I think she can do better, or maybe it's just that I don't think they're at the same maturity level, or they process things at different speeds and in different ways. Maybe they were compatible. They were a great couple before. But all of us are adults, and we know that people change, and it may just be time to say adios to Colombia for Cheese Stick. All right, you guys. Well, it's time for me to say adios to you guys. I'll see you next week, same time, same place. Check out all the links in the show notes. Take care of yourselves in the next coming weeks, especially with school starting. If you guys have kids, I know it's stressful. Hang in there. We're all going to get through this. Wear a damn mask, wash your hands, and stay salty.